Welcome to the second hour of People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
And, you know, apparently we've stopped screwing around now. We've been talking about drugs for a whole hour. It's very sobering, oddly enough, chatting about drugs. There just is a lot to this, which is why we keep doing this, because honestly...
Cross-education, huh?
Yeah, I mean, pick what you know... Honestly, I think every topic we do has they're all kind of like bicycle wheels, right? You've got all the spokes. So pick the spoke you care about or the spokes you care about. So I guess if you don't care about grown-ups, so if it's okay if they lay all over the street and ruin their lives, that's one thing. You can say they're all over 18, they made their own choice. Okay, so scribble that off as a motivator for you. Kids, maybe you don't have any kids, so you don't really think a lot about kids. You care, but, you know, they have parents, so that's their parents' job, so we scribble that off. Don't work in school, so you don't really have anything that way. You're not in law enforcement, so you're not going to contact it that way. So you start kind of going through the things that I think a lot of people feel very disconnected about. You know, I heard somebody who had cancer, so they used marijuana and it helped them. And it's like, yeah, there's super no medical evidence about that. But anyway, whether they did or they didn't, but for every single person who would be listening to this or, you know, so you'd be talking to about this, it's coming for their wallet. So let's just say at the end of the day, this is going to cost you a fortune. So maybe you could care about that. Because nobody's getting out of that. We all pay taxes. I don't care if it's just sales tax. Maybe you don't have an income tax obligation these days. A lot of other of us do. And a ton of that money is going to warehouse people either in prison, hospitals, in shelters. We spend inordinate amounts of money on the homeless problem. And yet, like up in Wairika, for instance, a town with 7,700 people, I think it is, they have a homeless deal that now has 32 beds. Regularly, you have 20 that are filled. They dispersed their big homeless camp up there, so they figured, hey, they'll go from there to the shelter thing. They've got two of them. The one has 32 beds. There's only 20 filled. I was up there yesterday. People wandering all over the place. Now they're just wandering. So...
they don't want to follow the rules.
We had a guy, so, okay, you don't care about your wallet. How about your own personal safety? So forget the crime. Maybe you don't care about the crime. You're not going to go out at night. So when the zombies come out, you won't be out there. This show is aired at 12 o'clock on Sunday afternoons, right? If you're listening to this on the archive, you might not know that. So at 11:45, well, actually more like 11:50 when we come racing in, come rolling down a major city street with three lanes to a stoplight that turns green, which usually means go, and a guy with he's almost like the cartoon character with the little knapsack on his back, you know, over his shoulder, little sack of stuff slung over his shoulder. He marches right out in front of the cars, lane by lane by lane, and the third lane, a van missed him by a hair. Just didn't see him. He'd pop out in front of the next car, and then here come another guy. You're like, oh, no, he doesn't see it. Whoosh. So... This is waiting for you, like around every corner. It is sucking us all in. Actually, like nobody's getting out of this without being involved.
Well, and I think I get very frustrated when people. Well, it doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
That's their excuse. But why would you want to wait till it affects you personally or a loved one? Before you want to get on the bandwagon and make a difference.
But pick a spoke on the wheel, right?
Yeah.
It's like here just coming to do a radio program, driving down a normal street. We weren't in a ghetto of any kind. We just drove by the donut store, for heaven's sakes. And the fire department, actually. The fire department was right there. That actually would have been helpful. And here comes a guy, just marches out in the road. And that is not the first time I've seen it. And I'm positive that Monty and... Officer Joe, from a law enforcement and prosecutor standpoint, could verify that these guys make not just bad decisions to do drugs, but things that ultimately get them killed. I don't know. What do you think about that, Monty?
So, Aaron, you lay out a very clean scenario. People, well, if you don't care about this, you should care about this. one of the most effective ways to educate people on why they should care about drug policies and laws. At the bottom line, the question is always, what happens to kids when we have a society that has normalized, increased the use of any kind of mind-altering substance, judgment-impairing substance? How are kids affected? And I think the thing that compelled me, took me early in my career into the drug education world, which I, within a few years, being prosecutor, is the absolute knowledge of what kids face, the things that happen to kids because of the bad choices of adults. I've been in homes, certain of them lap, the front lawn is scattered, broken tricycles, the backyard and swings.
We're getting some interruption on your line, Monty.
I'm sorry.
You're in a bad spot.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. We were having you fade in and out, and I figured.
Monty, we need you to put the tin foil back on your head, please.
Okay. We all have our hats on. Come on.
Tell me if this is any better. I was talking about the number of times
it's lovely.
you go see a meth house where guys with hazmat suits are going in into a home, and they're going in with hazmat suits. Things they're not allowed to go in without hazmat suits. And there's little kids padding around the house in dirty diapers and bare feet, food in these places. And the concept of drug-endangered children is something everybody should care about. What's happening to little kids whose parents that are using any kind of mind-altering drugs? The number one thing, and politicians that don't view that as the number one thing to protect in society is children, we need to replace those people. If people don't care about children, I don't know how you help them. But I often think in the world of the environment, people need to chain themselves to a redwood tree.
Yeah.
Where are they now when our national forests are being decimated by carbon? Where are they? The entire Northwest lumber industry got taken because spotted owls were being bothered. But now we have cartels destroying habitat at such an alarming rate, and the pesticides and all the stuff that Officer Joe knows very much about. Those things are happening, and he asked, if you care about the environment, what do you think about this?
Yeah, well,
if you care about wildlife, what about this?
With the marijuana thing, I always, 100% of the time, if I speak about it, I take the pictures of all the dogs they cook and eat up in the groves north of us. And the pictures are horrible. I start with that. I'm like, okay, you don't care about drugs,
yep.
You don't care about crime, you don't live in this county, cross off all those things you might not care about. Maybe you don't even care if it's costing you a fortune because the eradication and all that, these are forever chemicals, they're going into your water table, you're going to glow in the dark eventually, still not in. How about dogs? What do you think about dogs? I did this to a guy who worked for National Marine Fisheries. And he's like, well, I don't care about that. And literally, this is our conversation. I go, what about this? And he's like, well, I don't care about that. And I thought, this is kind of fun in a frustrating sort of way. And I was busy on my phone pulling up the picture, the most gory picture I had of a dog that was in a fire pit. And I said, how do you feel about dogs? He goes, my dog is my best friend. And I was all, shazam. And I was like, here you go. This is what they do to dogs up where I'm talking about. And I thought we were eating dinner, too. Is it a dinner? And I'm like, I just ruined this guy's whole dinner. This is like the best day of my life. And he's like, oh, my God. You know? So there's something to hate for everybody, honestly. But the animals, and yeah, where's PETA? We say this all the time. Like, where's PETA?
Monty, that document I sent.
Well, one of the advantages,
the document I sent you, the Pot Dogs Dying for Your High, that's available for anybody. They can get it. Just email notmeofficer@gmail.com, all one word. I'll send them the document. It's we went into the grows. We rescued some dogs. We followed a rescue that all they do is rescue pot dogs. And it's disgusting. And when we went to the state of California, the state of California could have cared less. The ASPCA, PETA, well, yeah, we don't do pot. We don't do anything with pot. We can't do anything about that. And people don't realize that when you say ecosystem, it's more than just the plants. It's all the animals. There are no animals.
Yeah, there's no deer or anything.
There's no deer.
Up there.
There's no rabbits. There's no birds. They've all been poisoned out. And now, unfortunately, now we're seeing human beings actually being sickened. And when we have ads going on, like, for example, in our community, there's one pot store that puts out an ad called "Your Fresh Farm-to-Table Marijuana." You know, Monty, I've never seen one of them say, "Hey, we're going to open our doors and let the public come in and see all of our growing operations, and we're going to provide them with all those lab reports that have been, you know, actually given by a lab that you know, like Anresco's, a legitimate lab company, because legitimate lab companies in California show that over 80% of the products are now contaminated, including in the legal market. But you never hear anything about that. Over to you,
well,
Monty.
People in California and elsewhere get really excited about, you know, whether a certain red dye is in their food. But
Skittles.
Where's the alarm over people smoking pesticides? That pesticides are banned in the United States. We can't even use them for agricultural purposes, but they're smuggled into the country and sprayed all over the pot that people then smoke into their lungs. It's the craziest thing. But all of this comes back to people need to be educated, and politicians who support and encourage this kind of activity need to be outed. They need to be exposed for foolish behavior and foolish ideas that hurt kids, families, communities. Those three things we need to talk about: kids, families, and communities. How do our choices, our policy choices, our law choices impact those three things? And if it's not helping, the people that are making those laws and policies need to be removed and replaced with people who care about kids and families and communities. We have to educate people better. We're not doing it. We don't do enough of it. There are people like Kathy and Officer Joe and you guys doing this show, educate people every day. But where's government's huge campaigns to educate people about this? It's not happening, and things have to change. We have to do more.
Yeah. Well, so we're, you know, a minute out. We've got to take a little break, so we may not be able to cram this all in. But let's go back on the whole hemp thing, because it seems odd to me that in some of our communities we have decided not to have commercial growing because somehow somebody figured out that wasn't going to work. But then there's let's revisit hemp. Hemp is a harmless crop. Like, let's bring that in, and it's not the same, and that'd be a good thing. So, like, what would you say to that, for instance, if it were up to you?
Well, if the hemp industry is producing mind-altering drugs that are illegal and hurt people, somebody's got to call that out, and it has to be loud. And politicians that promote that and allow that to happen need to be exposed. And you guys have Board of Commissioners, from what I know, they've been very, very courageous and smart in calling out the environmental devastation, creating states of emergency, asking for state help, asking for federal help because of what's going on. You guys have been holding the line, calling out the emergency. It's awesome.
I wish I had the letter for that county when they sent it to the state. The federal EPA said, yeah, we're coming and helping you. They sent it to the state and said, we need to declare a state of emergency. You should see the letter. the state wrote back. You have to almost like read it in a funny voice just to keep yourself from getting really super angry. But it was all about, you know, we're doing everything we can, and we're partnering with you, and we've collaborated, and all this stuff. And the state really is just abdicating a lot of their enforcement. Some of their
And some of our local leaders. We had a strong board here locally in this county, but lately it's changing, and so we're having to do more education. And we're going to have to, when these people come up for, the only way you can get them is when they come up for office, you have to expose them so that the public knows that they're in bed with the marijuana industry.
But we have to explain to the public.
Yeah, we have to explain to the public.
Who most of them don't interact with anything that has anything to do with this, and a lot of them don't know what they're looking at. No.
You talked to 99% of the public today, Monty. What goes on in a marijuana grow? They think it's like something you see on a farm. They don't realize that $1,000 per plant, they're going to pour anything they can on it to keep it alive because it's just money. It's not marijuana per se. It's just money.
It's just money.
When people talk about something. The evidence that education works, why we know education works, and in the ways it works to change public attitudes and opinions.
Monty has been overtaken by a snowstorm, apparently, in Idaho. It must be unseasonably cool in Idaho. We have to work on our connection. And, hey, look at that. It's time for a break. And we're going to play Officer Joe's favorite song. Are you ready?
Go for it.
Okay. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I was going to go to work. But then I got high. Ooh. I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why.
Why?
Hey, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to court before I got high. Ooh. I was gonna pay my child support, but then I.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice.
Officer Joe's fired now. Tell you what, we're gonna have to change the show to open mic faux pas. Do people know how to spell
take
faux
two.
Pas?
Take two, cut, cut.
I was talking to the snowplow operator in Idaho, and he's plowed out Monty, and Monty's back.
Monty's back. Sans snow.
I moved location, so hopefully this is better.
Ooh, we love it. Very nice. No more.
Good.
Yeah, you're the white noise king there for a minute. Okay, so I don't know where we were. What were we talking about?
I got caught up in the snowstorm. I was asking if we could talk for a minute about the idea that why education works, how we know that education works, and why we should do more of it. Because a lot of times I give presentations, and my job is to do law enforcement training or talk to a corporation or talk to a drug prevention group. And we talk about the things that are wrong, the things that we see that need to be changed. And people sometimes get the idea that it's so overwhelming, we can't work our way out of this. We can't educate enough people to change behavior. And I always like to help people think about why we know that prevention and education works. They do work. And here's a couple of examples. You think back to the time when I was a kid, lots of people smoked. All the celebrities smoked. Your parents smoked. Everybody smoked. Cigarettes were a big deal. the tobacco industry got away with using doctors to promote cigarettes. It's healthy. It's good for you. They use Santa Claus. They use politicians. They use babies to sell cigarettes in their advertising. And then it became more sophisticated with Joe Camel and the Marlboro Man and on and on and on. Well, what happened? At some point, we realized that it was killing people, and the tobacco companies were lying to us. And so we started a campaign. That campaign has dramatically changed the amount of people smoking cigarettes today. We have changed behavior by educating. And that's not the only example. You think about the idea of designated drivers. That was an idea that a Harvard Law professor had that was introduced on the popular TV shows like Cheers and Friends.
Really?
The idea of designated drivers. The idea of recycling. We didn't have three different colored cans in our house when I was a kid.
True.
Recycling, littering, adopt a highway, forest fire prevention, the Smokey the Bear.
Seatbelt.
Adopt a pet. The best one is seatbelts. Seatbelts, think about this. My parents put five of us kids in the sedan and drove to Disneyland from Idaho. We didn't know what a seatbelt was, and that was the world then. Today, if I get in my car with my grandkids in the back and I don't put on my seatbelt, what do you think happens? Grandpa! And Riker and crew are listening right now, so I want to shout out to them. Grandpa, what are you doing? You can't drive without your seatbelt, because it's been ingrained in their little brains that that's how people act. We have done that through education.
Yeah,
the government, other people need to think about how we've done that in the past. And one of the most hilarious, you talk about liberal humor, one of the most hilarious evidences that we can change people's behavior is when you see people with a glove and a little baggie at the park as they're following their dog around, picking stuff up behind the dog. We've trained humans to do that, because if they don't do that, they will be shunned by their neighbors.
Yeah.
So we have the ability to change behaviors, attitudes, and actions when we choose to do so. And there's very few things that demand, require, that we should expect than to help people make better choices about what they put into their brains and bodies, so that we can raise healthy, happy, safe kids, families, create better communities.
Monty, I have a question from one of our listeners, and he wants to know, how will the Safer Banking Act help hide marijuana money?
Goodness. So under federal law, all money that's derived from selling pot, whether legal or illegal, is considered drug proceeds. It's all forfeitable.
Mm.
No one has the right to drug proceeds. So money going into banks is dope money. In the old days, that's all forfeitable. If you allow the pot industry to use the banking system, it will greatly increase their ability to deal with all of this money that they have. It will embolden all of them. It will help all of them. It will enrich the banks. So you have banks that are clamoring to be able to take pot money, because that's a lot of money that they want. But it's a terrible, terrible idea. It's just one more thing along the slippery slope to make it easier and easier for the pot industry to basically become and exceed big tobacco, big alcohol.
But it's
the pot industry is big, is tobacco industry on steroids.
But isn't
it? Go ahead.
Isn't the pot industry, I've heard stories of them walking into the tax collector's office, for instance, if they withhold taxes on their employees' wages, and they walk in with bags of money to pay their taxes. Isn't that a roundabout way?
Roundabout way of
using the banking system?
Sure they do. And that money they bring in is drug. It's all legal under federal. Whether it's restaurant, and so they come in.
Oh, Monty, I think it's snowing.
The blizzard is
back. The blizzard's back in Idaho.
It's happening again?
No, that was pretty good, though. Yeah. It's almost like when, you know, you tell them they can't hear them, and then it's just like my conversations with Officer Joe on the cell phone, actually.
I'm sorry.
Vaguely reminiscent.
So the bags of money, it's all drug proceeds. And so if the state says, oh, these are taxes, it doesn't change the nature of the thing. You can't call it something else, and it is something else. It's still drug proceeds. So, yeah, the Banking Act thing is a terrible idea.
When you seize drug money, Monty, in your career, what actually happens to it in the end? Where does it go? Does it go into some, like, general fund and get, you know, buys lollipops? Or what? Where does that money actually go?
It's a very good question. So when you're doing investigations and you drugs off the street, put people in jail that deserve to be so that they don't create addict problems elsewhere. It's the drug traffickers that do that. And take away their assets. Assets that are taken for use for good purposes. Drug case prevention. Some of it goes to law enforcement. So instead of taking taxpayer money to enforce other laws and to protect the public, they use the drug proceeds, the drug dealer's proceeds, to do those things. So it actually is a cost savings to taxpayers because we take away the drug dealer's proceeds. And finally, the asset forfeiture takes away a source of their power, and that helps take out organized crime. Those forfeitures are a wonderful tool that law enforcement uses that help a lot of things in the community, including drug prevention, drug treatment, all of those kind of things.
It takes years, though, doesn't it, Monty? Really? I mean, you take the asset, it goes to a forfeiture hearing, goes to a judge, gets appealed, and it's several years before we actually can seize the money for real or take the money for real.
That's sometimes true, and it depends on your state law. But, for example, if somebody's taken off on the highway with 10 pounds of a pot or cocaine in their trunk and they have $100,000 in cash, that kind of case can be litigated very quickly. If it's complicated, like Hong Kong bank accounts and resort property in Fiji, like in Liechtenstein bank accounts, yeah, it takes a long, long time.
We took that $50,000 last week here, and but the difference is that those people will never show up. There will be no court hearing. The illegal alien Mexicans are gone. They're not going to come in and say, where's my money? Where are all my guns? We took 20 guns out of a grow last week that were all high-dollar hunting rifles. Those will all come back taken in a burglary. And even though we didn't catch any suspects, maybe the owners of those guns are going to get them back. And that's a common thing that we find in all these illegal grows is firearms and counter-surveillance. We're seeing a lot of counter-surveillance going on now in the illegal grows and booby traps. So that's an issue that local law enforcement has to deal with. Why do you think, Monty, why do you think the federal government hasn't become involved in states that have legalized marijuana? Any thoughts on that? Because it doesn't seem like the Fed spends any time.
The feds could have kept this from happening from the get-go. They never needed to allow. And the people say the drug wars failed. The drug war didn't fail. We never fought it. And when I say we didn't fight it, a real war means you look for victory. And the victory is not putting a bunch of people in prison. The victory is getting dope off the street. The victory is getting people to make choices that are good for their lives and their families and their kids. That's the victory. We've never fought that war to the degree necessary to win. And the feds, they basically said, we're not going to enforce certain federal laws. They're going to be on the books. We're not going to change them, but we're not going to enforce them. Where has that been beneficial in America? Was that beneficial on the border? Was that beneficial in other areas where we just ignore laws? If we pick and choose the laws we It's one thing to have a debate and change laws. It's an entirely different one to say, we have laws that we're not going to enforce. That causes lack of respect for laws and for a lot of bad things to happen. And frankly, that's one of the reasons I eventually left the U.S. Attorney's Office and went into full-time drug prevention, is I couldn't handle the fact that my own agency, my own department, decided to enforce some laws and not others. I saw it as a great tragedy. Fortunately, my career took a turn where I could spend almost all of my time teaching kids, helping corporations, helping government agencies, helping the public understand these issues in a way that I understand from 30 years of involvement in it, and hopefully provide some solutions in communities where changes could be made. And I love it. I love it. There's nothing better than having a group of kids talking about youth leadership and natural highs. We haven't talked anything about photography, but I find nature and the outdoors as the perfect anecdote to all of the nonsense that the drug culture offers. It's something that it's so wonderful. I love talking to kids about those things because finding natural highs in the world. The world has an infinite number of interesting things to do and see and experience. And the drug culture is nothing compared to that. So opening people's eyes, especially kids, to those opportunities is one of my most fun things. And I do that partly through photography because I just love the outdoors.
Well, and now people have phones with cameras, so even if you don't have the ability, back in the olden days, you had to be able to buy film and process it, and you had all that stuff. And Bill just found his camera that he had when he was like in his 20s. He found it up at his mom's house. She's she's 95 and she's moving. And Bill's like, "Hey, whose camera is this?" She's like, "I don't know. I think it was your dad's."
Oh,
he's like, "Wait, I recognize the strap. It still has film in it." We're going to learn about old Bill here pretty soon. Like, what was Bill doing back in the day?
You know, I'm Joe Friday. I just want the facts, Monty. So I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to bring you back to...
Oh, fun killer. Good. No, it's time for a break. Fun killer.
Okay.
You're not the boss of that.
Okay. Well, you can take a break. Monty, when you come back, will you finish your story about Sun Valley, your prosecution, whatever happened with it? I want to know what happened with that case. And then we can talk about the government. It thinks red dye is important, but they don't think marijuana is important.
It's Skittles. Got to outlaw Skittles.
Okay.
They're killing us, right?
Okay. All right.
And then, Monty, you can just talk about whatever you want.
Yeah.
You're in a blizzard, so you do whatever you want.
Am I still in the blizzard?
No, but we're not going to be done teasing you about it. I mean, it's good fun. All right.
Give me some music, Aaron.
You're listening to We the People. I have a two-parter on the music for you this time, so it's a story. You better listen up. You can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.
The name of this song is The Wildwood Flower. Now, The Wildwood Flower is an old country classic. It's gained a whole new popularity. The song isn't any more popular, but the flower is doing real good. The Wildwood Flower grew wild on the farm, and we never knew what it was called. Some said it's a flower, and some said it's a weed. I didn't give it much thought. One day I was out there talking to my brother, and I reached down for a weed to chew on. Things got fuzzy and things got blurry, and then everything was gone. Didn't know what happened, but I knew it beat the hell out of Smith and Burley. Smoking them wildwood flowers got to be a habit. We never seen no harm. Oh, we thought it was kind of handy. Take a trip and never leave the farm. They go puff that wildwood weed. Next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. All good things got to come to an end. It's the same with the wildwood weeds. One day this fella from Washington come by and spied them and turned white as a sheet. And he dug and he burned and he burned and he dug and he killed all our cute little weeds. And then he drove away. We just smiled and waved, sitting there on that sack of seeds.
That was Jim Stafford, just in case you want to go look that up and play it for yourself. It's called Wildwood Weed. It's a classic. So.
You guys have interesting music choices.
Don't we? And you know, if we were doing some other topic, we'd have interesting choices for that, too. Because, yeah, that's part of the fun.
Sure you do. You guys are pros.
Well, we're just really, you know, screwing around, but, you know. Bottom line is, though, Monty, really, if you're going to talk about serious topics and then you're going to just, you know, just hammer at people for 2 hours on a serious topic, nobody hears that. I mean, I don't listen to that. Who wants to listen to that? What a drag. But you can learn stuff. I mean, if people have a pretty good time and you squeeze some information in there, it's not a bad thing. We're just going to put old Officer Joe in a box there and let you do whatever you want. What do you want to do, Monty? What do you want to talk about here at the end?
Well,
your call.
I started doing drug talks 30 years ago. Started with maybe a Boy Scout troop, a class at a school, a church group, whatever. It eventually became all school assemblies and then later bigger events, and I've had the blessing of speaking at state, regional, national conferences, and I learned a long time ago that if you just preach to people about the bad drugs and what they do, that at the end, I would finish a talk, and I felt like I gave them good information, but it was all bad information, and it was depressing, and I didn't give them something good to end with. And so years ago, when I, after 30 years in law enforcement, I woke up one day and realized that my worldview was kind of dark. I'd seen so many things, so many images in my brain, my memory of bad things that I'd seen, that my view of the world had changed. I was suspicious of people. That was kind of dark, and I realized I had to do something to change the way my brain was working. And so I decided I needed a hobby. And the hobby I picked was, because I liked the outdoors anyway, was photography. I got a cheap little film camera, started taking pictures. When I did that, something changed in my brain. When I had a camera in my hand, looking through the lens of a camera, what I was looking for was everything that was beautiful, unique, inspiring, awesome. And so with the camera in my hand, it changed my perspective. And as I took more and more pictures and learned how to make pictures better, capture pictures better, I got more and more interested in that. I ultimately got really into wildlife photography. It changed me. It opened up my world from this kind of hunched over, dark mood of, oh, the world is terrible, to experiencing everything that's wonderful about life again. In a way, it was like I rediscovered this little child in me that I remember being a child on the farm growing up. Everything was awesome. Everything was new. And I rediscovered that childlike joy in my life. And so now, whenever I give a presentation, I give people the information, and here's what's going on. But on the flip side, look at this, and I start showing pictures of all the things I've seen, from little things to big sunsets to wildlife. And it's, I said, here is the world we live in. The opportunities, the experiences, the creatures, the people, the beauty of it all. It's infinitely awesome and infinitely interesting, way better than anything the drug culture can offer. And now, when I give presentations, the ability to turn all of that darkness around to the light, to the world, to the things that are good in life, it gives me an opportunity to share a vision of where people can go that's way better than anything a drug can bring them. And I love doing that. I love doing that with kids. I love doing that with adults. The idea of rediscovering joy. My journey had a lot of dark moments, not of my own making, but of things I had to see, I had to deal with. But the journey in my later life that allows me now to provide some, hopefully some inspiration, some ideas on how to make the world a better place is so, so rewarding to me. It's just a wonderful opportunity. I love to do it, and I love to share information with people like you that are making a difference in the world, that are fighting the battle every day and educating the public. It's awesome.
Well,
keep it up.
You've kind of hit on, you know, hit on that, because without, you know, when we were kids, we had, you know, paper routes. You know, I lived in the East, so we were either shoveling or raking. So we had stuff to do, but a lot of our younger people growing up, you know, we used to, you know, take our bikes and you could ride wherever you want, and, you know, you had to be home when the streetlights came on, that kind of stuff. But now kids have to stay pretty close to home. You know, the light, the world's gotten a little weird. You can't even, what was that kid, 3 years old, walking through a mall and some guy snatches the kid up and tries to run away? So you can't really give your kids that kind of rope. It's a little difficult. And so it's easy for them to get kind of buried in some of this bad behavior. Because it's close to home, and social media promotes it.
Yeah, social media.
So, but hobbies like photography, do you have, like, so Monty, do you do workshops? Do you do those for the school so that they could, like, create a group within the school and they do that? Or, like,
do you run that? We do a lot of, in Idaho and elsewhere, we do a lot of things that are focused around natural highs. So we could go into a school and might spend an entire day doing things at a school, promoting the idea of finding natural highs and avoiding the bad decisions. That resonates with young people. They like it. But what we have to do is help adults not model bad behavior. Our kids don't have much of a chance if mom and dad are getting stoned every night, or their governor is extolling the virtues of how many dispensaries we have now and how much money we've made off of selling weed. We've got to get adult behavior together. It's very common for me to get a call. I get a call, Fort Myers, Florida. Can you come and give a talk here, Monty, to our kids at school? And the common discussion is, okay, well, what do you want me to do? We want you to come and talk to our kids. Well, what do you want me to do with them? Well, the idea is we want you to fix our kids. And I'll say, do you want me to fix your kids in an hour? Do you think that will help?
Well, Monty, if you can do that, what are we wasting our time on radio?
They kind of gulp, and what it boils down to is they're just checking a box. Oh, we had a speaker at our school. We had a red ribbon speaker. We had somebody come in, and it doesn't do anything. And so I say, if you want to bring me to Fort Myers, I will come, but only under this situation. I will come, but I want to talk to your adults first. I want to talk to your community stakeholders. I want to talk to your mayor, your county commissioners, your sheriff, your school officials, your religious leaders. I want to get them in one room and talk to them about the things your kids face today. I need to talk to them about policies and laws and choices and decisions that they make in their community. Then I will talk to your kids. I don't think it helps for me to come to talk to your kids if adult behavior does not change. And that model usually goes from me giving a talk for 1 hour to all day or sometimes 2 days, talking to different groups, going to juvenile detention centers often, going to alternative high schools to talk to assemblies of kids where the kids understand the consequences of bad choices. It's so good when people understand how these problems start to get fixed. It starts with adult behavior. We cannot promote bad behavior as a society and expect good results. We cannot promote inebriation. We cannot promote the selling of products that are, think about this, the main goal of the pot industry now, well, the pot legalizers, they want everybody to grow it in their own home.
And so yeah, that's what a great
idea. Ultimate goal. Everybody can grow. So you're talking, but you're not talking about Woodstock weed. You're talking about 90% THC. That's an entirely different drug. It's an entirely different thing. It's not the commercial, it's not the legalization of pot as much as it is the commercialization of THC. That's the goal. THC, gram for gram, is similar to the spot price of gold today. That's why there is so much clamor over selling it. It is like liquid gold. No one should be trusted to promote a product as being not harmful or even healthy at that kind of a price. The money corrupts. It corrupts everybody. And when it corrupts government officials, bad policies and laws are created. And the nonsense gets worse. And the harms get worse. And more children are hurt. Families destroyed. Public safety declines. Bad behavior. Bad choices. We have to do better. You guys are doing a great job. I admire everything you're doing. And I appreciate being able to be on the show.
Well, we
what
like
can I
add,
say in the last
Well,
minutes?
We like adding, you know, it's always good to add more perspectives, more voices. And, you know, we've done a lot of shows about the detail of the chemical composition, about, you know, lots of facets of this. And so I really hope if this is a topic that people are kind of thinking, you know, I was kind of in favor of this before, but wow, what is going on? It's really worth looking into, and it's fascinating to find out. I mean, we've had one guy on, he's a pharmacist, and while they were trying to legalize it in Washington, the police were really basically on board because they were promised a big, you know, a big budget increase, and they felt like they could do a lot of good with the increase in the budget, so they didn't oppose the legalization. But it never that never pencils, you know.
No.
Foolish decisions were made 10 years ago based upon promises, false promises. There's no excuse for those today.
Right, because we got enough history under our belt.
Yep.
Like when we were looking at all these things here, we were like, oh my gosh. Now, remember, Oklahoma was talking about it. We're like, no, don't do it. You're going to become us. And they did, and they are.
Yeah. Well, look at, well, Oregon, you know, they did it, and then they decided it was so great they're going to legalize hard drugs.
Yeah, everything.
And that was a big flop, and now they're reversing all of that. It was a disaster.
I think we call that a bust.
Yeah.
Sadly, our neighboring states provide Idaho with all the evidence they need to stay the course.
Yeah.
We view ourselves as an island of sanity in a sea of insanity. And our goal is to preserve and protect the way of life and culture here that we enjoy and not adopt ridiculous ideas from other states. You serve as the poster children for bad ideas. So
it's just a thought that you're probably going to need border patrol of your own.
We have so many people moving here.
I kind of know that, yeah.
Those bad choices. But we love people that come here if they want to preserve the same thing.
We sent you our previous sheriff, though, so we're up in your game. We're increasing the quality of your citizenry.
Well, the people, some of the most loud opponents of any of this nonsense are people that have moved here from California and other states. They're eyewitnesses, and they come here and say, no, it is not happening here. This is some of the loudest voices in the legislature. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Wow.
Thank you, Monty.
Well, we can queue up Ain't No Rest for the Wicked, since obviously that's the deal, and the chat in our thing wasn't work, so we're just going to roll an audible here. even the music has failed me at the end. Never fails. Well, Monty, we appreciate you going on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride with us, and we look forward to having you come back. But I really do hope people go to the site for today. It is August the 10th, 2025, by the way, in case we play this again, but as I'm sure we will. And I hope you go in and look at Monty's pictures, because they're fantastic. And I hope you get tons of speaking engagements, Monty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Monty.
Thank you. Keep up the great work.
You do.
Good.